Hello and welcome to Hysteria. I'm Erin Ryan.
And I'm Alyssa Mastromonaco.
Alyssa, we are recording on Groundhog Day, so our listeners are going to hear this on the 3rd or later. But I was thinking about the movie Groundhog Day and how, you know, in years past, I used to always watch it around this time of the year because it was really funny to imagine a day that just repeated itself over and over again. Do you think that movie has kind of lost its mojo?
Yeah, there's nothing about wanting to relive days that is appealing or entertaining in any way, shape, or form after the pandemic.
Well, you know what else is funny is in that movie, Bill Murray's character uses the repeated days to try to improve himself. And like, I did nothing of the sort. Like, he's a better person than me. This piece of shit character that is like, check out this jerk. He's a better person than you.
He is. And he can have it. You know, he can have it.
Yeah. And groundhogs are weird anyway. So I think we should leave them alone. They're like giant rodents, right?
Do you remember when Bill de Blasio kept dropping the groundhog?
Didn't it die?
Yeah. And it was a lady groundhog.
Oh my gosh.
That's what I woke up thinking about.
Why can't New York City elect a good mayor? Anyway, let's get to the show. This week, we're joined by Robin Given, Grace Parra, and Kara Klenk to tackle the following questions. What are Washington's least serious people whining about now? Which political figures are most and least fluent in the language of fashion? How do we check in on each other? And can tap dance heal what ails us? All this and more right now. Alyssa, how's the news this week?
Erin, I'd call it less than fair to middling. I don't know.
On a scale of 1 to 10, it's about a 3.
Yeah, maybe 3.5, maybe.
It's like 3.5 in terms of goodness, not in terms of like direness or urgency.
Correct. Correct.
Yeah. So let's get into what's dire and urgent. So, you know, right now, Roe v. Wade is pretty much done, which we've been saying for quite some time. Since this podcast existed, Anthony Kennedy resigned, we were like, fuck, it's over. And I think we were probably right. I take no pleasure in being right about that. But it seems pretty clear that the Supreme Court, the 6-3 majority conservative Supreme Court, is going to gut Roe v. Wade when the ruling comes down, probably in June. So what is happening at the state level is Republican legislators are really getting horny about restricting abortion in their respective states as much as they possibly can, with the anticipation that Roe will fall and their laws will actually be able to go into effect. So we have, I'm going to just list a few of these states. Nebraska has introduced a new bill to ban all abortions if Roe v. Wade falls. I don't know. Do you think Roe v. Wade is going to fall and like all abortions can be banned? Do you think that's going to be something that can happen? Or do you think they're going to try to split the difference and be like, some abortions can be banned?
They're going to try to half measure it, I think, because mostly I just feel like they don't want to be protested or something. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. I'd like to think they're going to half measure it, but God knows what they could actually do.
Yeah. I mean, the thing that I was thinking about is, you know, Nebraska is doing this. Florida has also introduced a law that seems more like it will actually be able to go into effect because they are banning abortions after 15 weeks, which is, I believe, what the Mississippi law that is in question in the case before the Supreme Court bans it at. Arizona has introduced the Arizona Heartbeat Act, which mimics that crazy Texas law that banned abortion anytime cardiac activity can be detected in a fetus. By the way, that little flicker, the 6-week, that's not a heart. That is cardiac activity. And I think that mischaracterizing it as a heart really gives fuel to the anti-abortion fire. There's also anti-abortion legislation on the table in Nebraska, Ohio, Oklahoma, South Carolina. Indiana is going to call a special session if Roe v. Wade falls to legislate women's bodies. Alyssa, why do you think they're calling this 15 weeks thing a compromise? Do you think that they're trying to sell this as something that isn't insane?
Yeah, of course. They want to be like sometimes there's actually no such thing as compromise. There's like right and wrong. And in this instance, it's right and wrong. And no, they want to be like, see, America, we're here, we're trying to work with these crazy fringe lunatics, but they won't even come to the table on this 15 weeks. So no, I definitely think they're trying to sound like they're somehow reasonable and here for it when like, fuck off, just fuck off.
Yeah, the 15 weeks thing seems like it's an attempt to seem reasonable given the established, like what they've established the parameters of the argument, which is that the current state of affairs is unreasonable, which is abortions can't be restricted up to the point of viability unless it's in the interest of the state, which states have really pushed and pushed and pushed. Versus the other side of it, they've decided that the other side of the argument is no abortions for anyone after fetal cardiac activity can be detected, which is not what the other side of the debate is.
Right.
The other side of the debate is abortions can be regulated. They're trying to paint it as though the other side is all abortions are banned. And so allowing this Mississippi law in Dobbs versus Jackson Women's Health, allowing this 15-week ban to go into effect will appear to be a compromise to the public. Do not fall for it.
Do not fall for it.
Not a fucking compromise. All of these Republican chuckle fucks across the country are trying to line up to have it so that women in their states, people who are pregnant in their states who do not want to give birth, cannot access the reproductive health care that they need. They're making it their business, and it is fucking bullshit. And this is why statewide elections matter.
Yep.
This is why it's really important to pay attention to, you know what? Try switching off MSNBC. Not you, Alyssa. I know that you pay attention to your state and local politics. But switch off MSNBC, switch off CNN, and read your nearest local newspaper. Read whoever is on your state capitol beat. Read up on what is going on in your state, because that is where these laws are going to affect your life. If a federal abortion, if a federal protections of abortion are struck down, your state is where your rights are dictated. So you got to pay attention. Speaking of the Supreme Court. President Biden has pledged to nominate a Black woman, a Black justice, and to replace Justice Stephen Breyer, who is retiring. What are some of the more interesting public statements that you've seen on this move, Alyssa?
Okay, so many, Erin. So the one that actually struck me the most, because I never really know what he's doing, was when Lindsey Graham said that elections have consequences, and you know, and he actually spoke to how one of the nominees who is from South Carolina, Michelle Childs, was like eminently qualified. I was like, what is this even happening here? But mostly his colleagues have been like, what a political move by Biden to say that he's going to nominate a Black woman. And this was a campaign promise. And therefore everything about this process now is political. And it's like, fuck off. What are you even talking about? What are you even talking about? Gorsuch, Kavanaugh, Amy Coney Barrett. Like their indignation is trash. And it's just, nobody should even replay what they are saying or report on it, because it is, unless the sentence starts as in another hypocritical move, ..
It is not a serious argument, and it is being put forth by people who are not serious people. It is like, it's ridiculous for them to immediately come out and deride Biden's choice. There are many female Black judges and jurists who are exceptional and would do a great job on the Supreme Court. And to come out immediately and say, like, this person is going to be a radical is crazy. You know who does have, like, a machine and a vetting process in place to vet justices to make sure that they only will do certain things when they reach the Supreme Court? Fucking Republicans do.
Hello.
The Federalist Society is their whole vetting mechanism. No conservative justice has been appointed to the Supreme Court in recent memory without being approved by the extremely conservative Federalist Society. So, like, Democrats don't have that machinery in place. It is more projection by conservatives. I personally, the thing that really gets to me is the implication that a Black woman wouldn't be qualified because she's just being chosen because she's Black. Well, what about all of the white, you think all of the white men who were on the court, every single one of them was not chosen because they were white men? Like, totally. The implication is that white men have the qualifications and capacity, and people who are not white men are somehow being given a favor.
Well, and the other thing too, Erin, that's like, that I have been frustrated with in the reporting when people are trying to like both sides this, is that there is a huge difference between Joe Biden saying, even during the campaign, saying he would nominate a Black woman to the Supreme Court so that the fucking Supreme Court looks like the country that it legislates or govern, whatever the fuck word would be, makes laws for. That is so radically different than Trump saying that he would only appoint pro-life justices. There is a difference between saying that the bench should look like America and between saying that you will only appoint people that would only rule a certain way without nuance, is essentially what Trump was saying on these policy issues. So it's so hypocritical and gross and not the same thing. And also Reagan, when he was running for president, said that he would nominate a woman during his campaign. So like, why is that different than this? It's just, Erin, it's just more jiggery pokery on part of the Republicans.
Absolutely. And I think that anybody who brings up the like, oh, affirmative action, blah, 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 is, like I said, not a person who is being serious and not a person to be taken seriously. Okay, so we're going to take a break. But when we come back, we have an interview with a person who I have looked up to for a long time, a great writer. But it just so happens that her column this week in The Washington Post is about Biden's Supreme Court nominee. And I can't wait to talk to her about it. We'll be right back. Okay, Alyssa, do you know why I dressed up for this podcast today?
I think I have an idea, but please tell me.
Yeah, I'm wearing a red lip. This is an audio medium. I've got a red lip on and a white canvas jumpsuit because the person that we are talking to today is one of the most astute, sharp, smart voices in fashion criticism, and I do not want to get red. So joining us today is Robin Given. She is a senior editor at large for The Washington Post, where she's covered the intersection of fashion, culture, and politics. She has also authored several books, including The Battle of Versailles, The Night American Fashion Stumbled into the Spotlight and Made History. And in 2006, she was the first fashion critic to earn a Pulitzer Prize for criticism. And also, she's a writer that I've looked up to since before I was a writer. So welcome to Hysteria, Robin.
Thank you so much for having me. And I fear that I've really let you down because I'm wearing a hoodie.
Don't.
I know, but you look awesome.
You're in good company over here. Also in a hoodie.
See, the critic doesn't need to dress to, like, you're the fashion critic. You don't need to dress up. You can just like take a look at me and be like, she looks fine. She looks okay. And that's enough for me. But I want to start this conversation by talking about your most recent piece, which posted on Tuesday. Your most recent piece is about President Biden's soon-to-be-announced Supreme Court nominee. He's fulfilling a promise he made on the campaign trail, which is that he's going to nominate a Black woman to serve on the court. And that's caused a, I think, to use a technical term, a shit fit among conservative white men. So why do you think that people like Ted Cruz are so upset about this promise?
Well, you know, I think to some degree they're upset because they're always upset about something. You know, the world as it changes and evolves just seems to have caused them or is causing them an incredible amount of agita, and this is just sort of adding to it. But I also think that the fact that, you know, Biden said that it's time for a Black woman to serve on the Supreme Court, it's beyond time for that to happen, and that he made a point of being quite intentional about that, I think has just caused them to start down this road that, I mean, I hesitate to use the word racist, but certainly has troubling racial stereotypes attached to their language. And I think it's just sort of drawing out this incredible fear of the ways in which the culture is changing and the ways in which the power structure is shifting so that it's not solely in the hands of white men. And I think all those fears have unleashed a kind of illogic and a fear that is just really troubling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wanted to read a little excerpt from the piece because I thought it was so great. You wrote, when Trump promised to nominate a woman to fill the seat left vacant by Ginsburg, that decision was greeted with a nod and polite applause. During Justice Amy Coney Barrett's confirmation in 2020, conservatives repeatedly referenced her 7 children. They marveled at her ability to balance her maternal responsibilities with her professional accomplishments, and they oozed admiration for her devotion to family. They planted her atop a pedestal of divine femininity, a kind of glorification that rarely shines on Black women. I thought that was really great. I was imagining if Biden nominated a Black woman with 7 children, the way that Ted Cruz would respond to that.
I shudder to think the way that Ted Cruz would respond to that. I mean, it really does when I hear those responses, it makes me question a lot of things about, who they surround themselves with, who they think they are representing, who their constituents are, who they think they are delighting with comments like that. It's really astonishing to me that they can actually look back over the history of the court, look back over history from barely 2 years ago, and act so shocked and appalled about, Biden's decision and the necessity, to a great degree, for that kind of decision. And, and I'm also just sort of was really struck by the sheer disingenuousness of so much of it. I mean, Senator Susan Collins getting, all of her concerns in a huff over, the sudden politicization of a Supreme Court nomination. I listened to it and I just thought the degree to which you're contorting yourself in order to oppose what at this point is still an unnamed nominee is just remarkable to me. I mean, I just thought, why not just hold your ire until you actually have someone that you can be offended by? But instead, I do feel like a lot of this is, sort of in lieu of being able to block a nomination or block a confirmation, the goal is to just make sure that whoever is nominated has a giant asterisk next to their name. And then, to sort of say that, this asterisk is, by default, it's like, no, it will only be there because you have decided to put it there.
Robin, you've written a lot on first ladies and female politicians. What's the difference between sexist commentary on how a woman looks and relevant commentary on the political message clothing sense?
So how many different senators put you up to that question? No. I mean, I would say that the difference is that I hope in my writing about attire and appearance, I try to keep to what I think the messages are and the communication capacity of attire is. I have always said that, my sort of rules of engagement when it comes to writing about appearance, are to focus on those things that people make conscious decisions about. And they make conscious decisions about how formally they want to be dressed, about whether or not, certainly for male politicians, whether or not they're going to take off that suit jacket and roll up the sleeves, which, I have always said is sort of the universal symbol of, I'm about to speak earnestly to you now. I think all of those gestures go into the whole sort of stage play of politics. I don't write about, people's weight and the size of their nose and, you know, things like that. And believe me, I have gotten emails from readers who have said, oh, you know, why don't you write about, you know, how heavy so-and-so is, or, you know, or how someone is just unattractive in their estimation. To me, that's when you get into completely unfair territory and it doesn't have anything to do with anything. Mm-hmm.
You extensively covered the Obamas during their 8 years in the White House. How did you see the conversation around fashion, in particular Michelle Obama's fashion, in the context of first ladies of the past? And what did you make of Melania Trump's fashion in comparison?
Well, when the Obamas were in the White House, I was covering Michelle Obama in like a very official capacity. I mean, my beat was the East Wing for about a year and a half. And, you know, it was a great time to write about the First Lady because essentially everything was a historical moment. It was a first. And, you know, it was interesting to see the way that the culture responded to her, the way that she engaged with the culture, how she began her sort of rollout as First Lady with something quite, as she, you know, later put it, something that was, you know, quite humble and hopefully uncontroversial. A garden. I planted a garden. And, you know, it just sort of all began from there. And she was, I thought, really masterful in the way that she used fashion. I mean, she, I think, recognized that, you know, part of what is attached to the First Lady is interest in her attire. And, you know, that's for a multitude of reasons, not the least of which is that so often she doesn't have a speaking role. She is in the picture as a symbol of something, you know, sort of a Rorschach symbol, if you will. And so the clothes speak volumes. And I love the fact that she decided that if there was going to be a spotlight on my clothing, I want my clothing to say something that is thoughtful and is articulate and, you know, sometimes may be, you know, full of just sort of delight and charm, and sometimes is about diplomacy, and sometimes is about diversity and inclusivity. I think her clothing set a host. It was great. It was absolutely great. And there was a reason why the fashion industry absolutely adored her. And it was because she was a free-ranging fashion consumer. You know, I mean, she wore everyone from the most established designers to people that, you know, about five people had heard of. And that delighted them. And she treated the fashion industry like an industry that was contributing to the cultural conversation and to the economy. And, you know, it's been really hard for first ladies, you know, previously to do that, because they often, I think, felt that if they did pay too much attention to their clothes, everything else would just sort of get smothered by fashion commentary. I know, you asked me about Melania Trump. you know, I wasn't writing so much about the First Lady at that point, but you know, my thoughts about Melania were that one, she dressed very much for herself, as opposed to this idea of representing the sort of vastness and the nuances of American culture. You know, she dressed to be photogenic. I always felt that she was very much sort of treating each public event like a photo op, and was thinking about her angles and was thinking about how is this going to look, you know, in the history books. She felt no deep compunction to wear American designers. And she felt no obligation to elevate lesser known American brands. And for me, I think when she wore that infamous Zara coat that said, you know, I really don't care, do you? To me, that was just kind of this nuclear fashion option in which she just sort of, you know, used her clothing to spray everyone within like 50 yards of her. And, you know, at that point, I think everything else that she wore just, you know, got smothered out by that one garment.
Robin, who do you think is the most fashionable politician right now?
That's an interesting question. Well, you know, I have a couple of friends who are menswear stylists, and they can attest to the fact that I have been very weirdly obsessed with President Biden's pocket squares. And I don't know. It's a sickness. It's a distraction. I can't really fully explain it, but I am so delighted in that pocket square because it is so precisely folded. It is always white. It has three peaks, and it's like he pulls it out when, you know, he is being very serious about something. And to me, it just is this little added flourish, this little detail that is so old school and requires just a little bit of extra effort. And I think it just sort of also reminds me of sort of men of like my father's generation who sort of felt like, you know, dressing up and dressing in a very polished way was kind of this sign of respect for the situation and for themselves. And I sort of love that he doesn't shy away from it because it is a bit of an old school thing to do. And clearly I have given way too much thought to this pocket square.
Is there anybody whose fashion choices routinely make you cringe?
Well, I mean, come on. I mean, the obvious one is, you know, Senator Sinema, whose choices just baffle me, mostly because they are so, I think the technical term would just be they're out of the norm. They're far afield from traditionally what we think of as sort of business attire. And even as she's wearing these things that are so far afield, her response is, why on earth are you looking at my clothes and discussing my clothes? And so I just find that tension, I find it somewhat hypocritical because it's a bit like setting your hair on fire and then saying, why are you sending fire trucks over here? Like, what's the problem?
Well, your assessment of Sinema's fashion is much more restrained than mine, but we, I think, agree. There are still some people in publications who kind of cordon off fashion criticism into this unserious or like for women corner. What sort of meaningful commentary and analysis do you think these people are missing out on by discounting fashion?
Well, I don't think they're really seeing the world that's in front of them. And I don't think they're taking advantage of the full vocabulary that we have to communicate with each other. And I also think that they're sort of failing to see the inherent sexism in that. You know, I often compare sort of fashion coverage and sports coverage and the ways in which, you know, we approach sports coverage is with an incredible amount of gravity. And, you know, the fact that we attach patriotism to a baseball game or a football game And we don't see, you know, the connection that fashion has to who we are and how we define ourselves, how we want to be seen by other people, the ways in which fashion can really send false messages or make us, you know, fall prey to stereotypes. You know, I have just, you know, things like hoodies and work boots. And, you know, I mean, there are so many just garments that have all of these emotions and historical references and stereotypes attached to them. And I think if we don't really consider that and understand it, then we end up making the same incorrect assumptions over and over and over again. And, you know, and the other thing I would say is that when I first came to Washington, I was surprised by the number of women that I met who enjoyed fashion, but really, you know, said that they refrained from talking about it publicly, as if having a conversation about it was sort of immediately going to sort of lower their IQ by several points. And, you know, someone like much smarter than me, you know, once said that we should not diminish the pleasures that women take in their personal lives, because that diminishes women. And so why we, you know, want to belittle fashion when it's so much like the passion of predominantly women, although increasingly, you know, more men for sure. You know, I think says something about the way that we value the joys and pursuits of women.
Robin, thank you so much. Listeners, if you want to read more of Robin Givens' work, you can find her work at The Washington Post. Thanks for joining us. We will take a quick break.
Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck. Or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge. Upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Game night's fun until someone spends 5 minutes lining up one shot. Chalk, breathe, re-chalk, still aiming. While they figure it out, I fire up Chumba Casino. I can spin anywhere, anytime, and there's always a new social casino game every week. Spins happen way faster than that shot. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
And we're back. Alyssa, this is sort of a serious topic, I guess. So before I do our little quippy thing, I'm going to introduce our other panelists so we can get into the topic, which is checking in on people that we care about. First up, she is a writer for Hulu Solar Opposites and Star Trek Lower Decks, our resident Trekkie, sci-fi nerd. You can watch both of those shows this summer. Grace Parra, welcome.
Hi, guys. Spicy little pepper. Very glad to be here with everybody. It's so lovely to see you guys. Hello.
I haven't seen you, like, as part of the show since before my leave, since you subbed in.
That's right. That's right. And it's fantastic to be back in this capacity. Alyssa and I had a wonderful time. But it's so good to see you, Erin Ryan. Oh my goodness. Just glowing and full of all the wisdom, by the way. I feel like I've been learning a lot from you these weeks.
Oh, thank you so much. Yeah, I don't know what I'm doing and nobody does. So that's the main thing that I've learned from being a mom is nobody knows what they're doing. Speaking of moms, I want to welcome the newest official member of the Hysteria crew. You know her, you love her. You've heard her many times on the pod. She's a writer. She's a comedian. She does everything. She's great at all of it. Kara Klink, welcome.
Oh, thank you so much. Greatest, of course, at being a mom, where I am. Unparalleled and undefeated in all ways. Yeah.
Undefeated.
That's actually the name of my comedy album. Buy it now on iTunes.
Oh, that is great. It has like the best cover art of any comedy album I've ever seen. And like,
I got the real guy who did the Sweet Valley covers to do my album cover.
Oh my
God. That's incredible.
He's like an older gentleman.
If I hadn't already gotten married, I would be like, I want that guy to do my wedding invitations. He can do, I want him to do the next time I have a big life event. He can do the illustration for that. But Kara, we're so excited that you're part of the crew officially.
I'm so excited to be here. Thank you for having me and bringing me on.
Yeah. So I'm going to get into something that is a little bit serious today, a lot serious today. And that is the topic of checking in on people. And I know that that sounds like very lighthearted. It sounds like a kind of circle back around business speak, but it's actually like a really serious emotional engagement with a person who might need it. Alyssa, you and I were kind of discussing this topic yesterday over text, and I know you have some thoughts. So, you know, what are your thoughts on the topic of checking in, and what are your experiences with checking in on people?
I mean, it's really hard. There's no universal way to correctly check in on someone, right? Like it all depends on who that person is and how they sort of accept your inquiries, right? And so figuring out the people that you know, maybe that you haven't talked to in a while or who have been giving you like interesting answers to questions, I think it's just so important to say, like, how are you? And if it's like, I'm fine, it's like, no. What's going on? You know, I think that's the problem is that so many of us think that nobody really wants the answer to what's really going on or how we really feel. And Erin, what you and I were talking about is that like not that long, well, a couple years ago, I guess at this point, my how time has not flown. I got into a pretty serious car accident and someone had checked in, not didn't know about the car accident, but they were just kind of droning on about their own life. And I was like, hey, by the way, just FYI, I got into like a pretty bad car accident. And they were like, really? And I explained it to them. And then weeks later, and I was really fucked up. Like I still don't drive normally. Like I'm so stressed. I haven't been able to get over some of the things. I used to love to drive and now I don't. And this person, the conversation kind of came back up because she was like, well, why don't you just drive down to see me? And I was like, well, because it's like 4 or 5 hours and I haven't done that. And it's really stressful. And she was like, whatever. And then when she saw me, she's like, oh my God, you were like really hurt. And I was like, yeah, dude, I got fucking braces on both my arms. Like it was bad. And like, I thought to myself, like, what did I not communicate? Like I blamed myself. Like, what did I not communicate about my accident or how I was feeling that it led her to believe I was like fine. And I kind of try to use that, I think, when I'm checking in on other people, because I know that at the time I thought I was being really honest, but I also know that I never want to make it seem like I'm trying to get attention. And I think that that's what we have to be really clear about is that when someone asks you how you are, like they're asking because they do want the answer. And if they are asking just because they think they're doing a good deed, well, then drown them in your problems. Like that's like, they're not going to get some like, oh, you know what? I went and asked all my friends how they were today and everyone's fine. It's like, no. You don't get a gold medal. You don't get your brownie badge for that. Like, you know, so that's why when I am asking to anyone listening, if I ask you how you are, I am looking for the actual answer. Don't, you know, don't tell me you're fine.
You've blocked out time in your schedule to like take in
whatever.
Let's
get in it. Let's do it. I'm here for it. Okay. I'll take an edible. Who cares? We'll get into it.
Kara, I wonder what your thoughts are on checking in with people and getting checked in on.
Well, I love Alyssa just coming out to the world saying, I care. I want to know. I do think that some people though are just going through like the social movements of it. Like, hi, how are you? And when you start to tell them something real, you sort of can see some people shut down and be like, I don't actually know how to handle this with you, which I think is interesting. I think I am a person who I don't really show a lot of vulnerability to people. So when people say, how are you? And I say, fine, no one really presses me anymore. I recently, actually over the weekend, had a dear friend of mine pass away. And
Sorry.
That's okay. I only bring it up to say I've had a few people like check in on me over text in the past few days. And even though it like completely makes me break down and start crying again, it does make me feel better. You know, like it does make me feel better just to have people say like, just, you know, I'm thinking about you. And like, in, I guess now I'm talking more about like a how are you in the wake of something big more than just a day to day. How are you? You know, there's obviously big differences and nuances to all social interaction. But I mean, how more recently was I checked in on? Yesterday, you know? Like, so I'm being checked in on actively. But I also try to be active, like the way that Alyssa's talking about, and say, like, how are you? Like, can we FaceTime? Like, can we catch up? Like, if you think something's going on with someone, more than just a cursory, you know, check in. I love a, like, or just saying, like, I've been in this exact position, or I, you know, I don't know. Sometimes I don't want to turn it around and make it about me, you know? I get like, and, but I also think just saying to, like, I was speaking to my friend who passed away. I was speaking to her sister, and I've also lost a sibling. So I was just saying, hey, you know, I've been here, and I can, like, I know exactly, you can absolutely tell me to fuck off. You can absolutely tell me that you don't have time for me right now, or you can unload everything on me, you know? So I think just making sure people know that you understand, like, where they're coming from in a lot of ways, I guess, in as many ways as you can. Wow, I just shared so much tragedy. I'm so excited to join the hysteria family. Thank you.
Oh, this is a place where we ask, how are you? We want the answer. This is an hour and a half podcast. We've got to fill it with answers to
how are you?
Grace, how are you?
I'm feeling great, guys. But if you have an extra hour and a half, let's get started. Buckle up. What's so interesting, I feel good, by the way, partly because I'm so excited to talk about this subject. It's been on my mind a lot for a couple of reasons. First of all, because I think what's interesting about what we've already been discussing today is the nuance of the medium that you use to connect with someone can rapidly change what kind of a reaction you get, which is to say that sometimes sending a quick text to say, hey, I'm thinking about you, how are you doing, is enough. Sometimes it requires a call. Sometimes it requires a FaceTime. Sometimes it requires an in-person conversation. And what's tricky is navigating all those different mediums. That is something that I really don't have a universal answer for. But I will say that, again, this is part of why I've been thinking about this recently. I am a huge advocate for the voice memo. So not picking up the phone and calling, but just leaving a voice memo via text message, via iMessage rather, or via WhatsApp, which is basically my voice saying whatever I want to say, but not on the phone, so the other person can receive it and respond whenever they want to. It's kind of a more intimate way to connect without the pressure of needing a response right then and there, which I found in recent months to be an awesome way to reconnect with people that I haven't necessarily connected with in a long time. Because, and I'm sure this is the same for you ladies, sometimes it can be very intimidating when too many weeks or months or even years have gone by since last you reached out to somebody. It can be really tough. It's like, oh, where do I even begin? So much so that sometimes you're just like, I'll just wait until they reach out to me. But I've found that the intimacy of a voicemail in the form of a voice memo is actually a very like kind of soft way to approach a relationship with somebody and allow for, sure, it can be 5 minutes of bits, but it can also, in that time, tends to be enough time to let somebody really get into the deeper stuff that they wouldn't necessarily otherwise via text. So that's the thing I really advocate for. And I don't know if you guys have any experience with the voice memo, but ooh, is it? Ooh.
Grace, that is such a good idea because one, someone hearing your voice can really engage them. And also it's like, you hearing their voice, you can kind of sense a bit sometimes where they are. And also like straight up calling someone, I don't know about you guys, but when someone calls me who hasn't called me in a while, I'm like, did someone die? Like, yeah. That is, right. It's immediately like something bad has happened. And yeah. then you're like, oh no. And then you talk to them and you're like, oh, you're fine. All right, bye.
And it doesn't have the obligation of a voicemail, which right. feels like you have to return it. And you got to check it. I don't know. There's something yeah. I like that is like even softer from a voicemail to a voice memo. I like totally. That.
You know, when I use it a lot also with group texts, and I think the concept of the group text is great in a million different ways, but in some instances, it's fantastic to be able to casually gauge how somebody is doing without needing to necessarily straight up ask. And you can also send voice memos to the group too. And again, sometimes like you'll get a private response from somebody if they can sense something or vice versa. I really recommend it. I really recommend it.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Kara, you mentioned this, and I think, Alyssa, you and I have talked about this, and Grace, I know that you do this. We are all women who project having it together and like don't like to seem as though we need things from people and don't – because – and I think for me, I can't speak for you beyond for you all beyond this. For me – when I'm feeling down or when I'm going through something hard, I am aware of how heavy it feels to me. Yeah. And I am really, really hesitant to burden somebody. And I'm using like very big air quotes there. I feel as though I'm burdening somebody when I ask for help or when I just need somebody to talk to. And usually when it gets to the point where I'm like asking for, you know, yes, I do need to talk, I will spend the whole time crying because I have not tended to my needs totally. To the point that I have this huge backlog. So as like strong women who project strength, even when things are going poorly, how do we reach out to our friends who are like that? How do we know to check in on our friends who are projecting strength?
It's tough.
Like Alyssa, what, like you're somebody who, I remember when you went through when you had the car accident, I remember how shook up you were. I wasn't aware as you were going through it how traumatic it was for you. And like as your trauma was forming, I wasn't aware of that. And I wish that I would have been more proactive about talking to you. I know I'm not the friend who tried to make you drive somewhere.
No,
but I think
you
I
are
could
not.
Have, but I think I could have been a better friend. So like no, let's use that as
no.
let's use
because here's the example. Is that I knew you supported me. I told you what happened. You were immediately like, what can I do? What's happening? I knew that if I needed to unload, that I could call you and unload. The reason what this person did was so traumatic is because they were actually asking something of me. And I was trying to explain so gingerly why I couldn't do it. When, you know, now I look at the time I was like, should I have sent pictures of my bandaged arms? Like, what the fuck? And it's because I was actually telling her the truth. She just wasn't listening, right? Mm-hmm. It's like, it's Alyssa, she'll bounce back, you know, but like since then, there are these weird things. Oh, this is like, I'm going to get super weird, you guys. But like growing up, it's so weird. But growing up, when my Oma and Opa would come visit, I would get so upset when they would leave because I was like weirdly aware at the age of two or three or four that like they could die, right? There was some weird thing about dying and I'd get so upset because I'd be afraid they were going to die before I got to see them again. And Aaron, I think I was texting with you about this. It's like gone and it kind of subsided. But then since the car accident, there are weird things that happen to me, right? Like I don't want to put the Christmas decorations away because I love Christmas and I'm afraid I'm going to die by the time Christmas comes around again, or like all these weird things that were triggered. And so finally one day I was like, you know what, Alyssa? This seems like a burden that you could ease. And I talked to my doctor and I was like, Doc G, like I'm super stressed. Like I keep getting these waves of things. And he, because also it's not just about being honest and checking in with your friends. It's also about being really honest with yourself and your medical community. And I said to him, I was like, look, this is really stressing me out. I don't know why this is happening. And he's like, Alyssa, it's been a pandemic. We have been isolated. There are all these things that are happening. You cannot control what your brain is doing right now. And we tried new medicine, which I was like, Aaron, tell me if I act like a freak, I'm on new medicine. But like, but you know, if he had not been so responsive and open to hearing what I had to say, I could have just gone on with my silver Christmas tree still up because I was like, I don't, I'm afraid of what's going to happen. Even if I did leave my husband a note that was like, if anything ever happens to me, I'm in the hospital, put up Christmas lights. But like those weird things like make me feel better. But that is, you know, for me, it's like for us checking in on our really strong friends, it's like, Aaron, when you were after you had the baby, you straight up said to me, I'm like, how are you doing? You're like, you know what? I need you to like check in on me and see how I am doing and what's going on with me. And I was like, girl, got it, on it. And like you said that, and that was, it's like you also have to learn, I think in some ways, to count on the people you know you can count on. When you're the person who's like looking for help, don't go to the friend who's like, what do you mean you're not going to drive 4.5 hours to celebrate me?
Kara, I want to talk a little bit more. I mean, I know that this is like sensitive, so if you need to stop, we can stop.
I open the door.
So, you know, I'm new to parenthood, but a lot of my friends, between my college friends, I think there's 17 children because, you know, Catholics.
Yeah.
but one of them when she was on a trip with her kids, their dog died back home. Mm. And she was texting the group chat and she was like, I have to somehow, she's in the car, her daughter doesn't know the dog died. And she does know, and she's broken up about it, but she also has to tell her daughter, you know, that their doggy died. And, you know, she's just, it really kind of crystallized the way that parents need to project strength for their kids.
Yeah.
So how do you, Kara, as like a parent with two kids, like how do you balance like being there for your kids, but also like being honest about your own emotional needs with like your friends and adults who love you?
Yeah, it's tough. And I know my husband, like in the last few days, has been like, am I doing enough? Can I help you? Like, is this, you know, because he's not always, you know, men in general, I don't know if I can generalize all men, but he, you know, he's like, I'm so sorry. Like he doesn't really know like what the next step to take is always. So it has been difficult. I mean, you definitely, you know, my daughter saw me crying and was like, what's wrong? And I just said, oh, I'm just sad. You know, I'm not, she's 2 3/4. I don't know if I can fully, and she's met my friend who passed away. So I didn't want to be like, remember my friend who had the cute dog you liked? She's in heaven now. Like, I didn't really feel like that was the conversation. So for me, a lot of it is waiting till they're asleep to cry. But mm-hmm. I do think that your kids help you in a way. Maybe that's just my way, but like I've just been like, okay, I got to keep it together for my kids. And in the past, I've thought, I'm the oldest of 6 kids. I thought I got to keep it together for my brothers and sisters, you know, like, so for me, it helps a little bit to have like some kind of like outside structure that's like propping me up. But then I do have to know that there's people around that will sort of help me when I eventually have a breakdown, because I will. So I don't know if that like answers your question, but it is, yeah, it is tough. You have to like be, you have to be a little bit tough for your kids because you don't want to introduce like trauma into your kids' lives if you don't have to, I guess. I mean, obviously there's going to be trauma. There's going to be loss, but, this is why I don't have a dog. You know?
I know. I don't remember who wrote that pets are tiny tragedies, but like I am now like, oh crap, now this baby is getting to know my 17-year-old cat. Like this is this is gonna end with me having to have a tough conversation with this baby.
But the other thing is kids are so resilient.
Yeah.
Like I think you can tell kids things.
I feel like the first upset, 3 years are like a do-over, right? They just kind of forget everything. Like at 3 years old, it's just wiped. So you're like, whew, get to try that again.
Get in all your murders, all your, you know, genocides. Get them all in now. They won't remember.
My daughter's almost 3, so I'm getting to the point where the memories are about to be recorded. So I've got to really clean things up.
Oh, no. So, Kara, you brought up something super interesting, and I'd love to hear you talk more on it, Grace. Kara mentioned the sort of like structure that depends on you, kind of keeping you up. And I know that for you and your family, you've been sort of part of that structural strength. How do you do that from far away? How do you provide strength to other people in your family, even people who are maybe older than you?
Yeah, it requires it's a lot of texting, honestly. It's a lot of using these phones, which I hate like my dependence on it. But what's really nice is being able to connect with anybody the second that I think of them, and I think that that's kind of key, at least for me, the experience has been, I had advice actually given to me many years ago from a friend who actually said this in reference to when she expressed gratitude to God. She was a religious person. And she was like, I just thank God anytime it comes to mind. And I try to apply that to reaching out to people, especially to my close family. Anytime I think about them, I just reach out. It's just a quick like, yo, what's up? It's a quick meme. It's nothing too deep. Because for me, the idea of having to have an overwhelmingly long catch-up conversation is a lot, and it feels exhausting. But in those moments of just being able to reach out very briefly, it's like my mom always says this, how do you eat an elephant bit by bit? It's sort of, you know, it's the same approach, I think, when it comes to maintaining the structure of those support systems. It's not like, hey, I'm going to have one very long conversation with you twice a year. It's, I'm going to send you a text saying, yo, what's up, bitch? Hope everything's great. Love you, mom. I don't call my mom a bitch. But, you know, something like that. And also, I will say that sometimes it's not as bald as a how are you text. That allows me to get into kind of a deeper conversation with people and feel like I'm maintaining those relationships. It's often about completely unrelated things. I have a brother who's obsessed with Tom Brady, for instance. This has been a very, as you can imagine, traumatic week for those in the Tom Brady camp. So sometimes it's not, you know, and come to find out my brother's kids, my niece and nephew have COVID, which I would have found out one way or another. They're fine. But, you know, they're resilient. Talk about kids being resilient. But, you know, it's like it came up because we were talking about something else and then it was like, oh, by the way, here's this thing that's happening. So what I will say is tricky, and tell me if you guys have had this experience. I feel like that structure works when there is a clear definition of who you are in your friend or family member's life and vice versa. What's tricky is when you really want to reach out to someone and all you get is that archetype that you mentioned, Aaron, which is the, I'm a strong woman and everything's fine. And I have this with a friend, and honestly, this has been a reason why I'm no longer close to this person, because every time I do reach out, it's always sunshine and rainbows. It's always, everything's great. Mm-hmm. Oh, everything's really good. Everything's really good. How are you? And this happened a few years ago. My dad passed away a couple years ago. And when I told her about it, and it was a moment where it was like, let's talk. Like, I'm ready. I've been, you know, dealing with this and I want to express this to you. This is a person I knew, you know, for 15, 20 years. So she knew my dad. She tried to steer the conversation into, but you're okay territory. It was like, but you're okay, right? Yeah. But you're okay, right? And I was like, I'm not actually. And I felt bad, even though this is somebody who I really thought was on the same page with me about what we could share with each other. It was striking. And those to me are the difficult kinds of interactions where you feel like you can be vulnerable with someone and you have made it very clear that they can be vulnerable with you. But for whatever reason, there's a barrier. That's put up. And I'm just kind of curious if you guys have had a similar experience and what the tactics are when that arises.
Yeah. I call those happy ending conversations where it's like, but everything, but the dog lived, right? But you're okay, right? But you're going to be, but like, it's going to get better, right? It's like, I think that it's good to be reminded that it's going to get better. Like that is helpful sometimes, but sometimes it feels like people just want to skip like a rock over the sadness and get right to me feeling better. And it's like, I need to talk about why I'm hurting right now. I don't need to talk about when I won't be hurting. When I'm not hurting, we don't need to talk about this. You know, like, it is such a thing, Grace. And I think this is like, it's a similar conversation to when you tell somebody about like your choice when it comes to like, you know, if you don't want to get married and you tell like an older person you don't want to get married and they're like, you might change your mind. It's like, no. Like you don't get like,
oh my God,
this conversation does not get to have a happy ending for you. This is a conversation for me. It's so funny.
Like what you're describing, I feel like is me in my 20s. Like in my 20s, like if any, I ever had a friend that said, I'm not going to have a kid, I'd go, just wait, you might want to. Like, because I think sometimes we all just get the bug and we want to. Like, we're all going to want to. And like, now I would never dream of saying anything like that. And that's not what I think anymore. But I used to have conversations like that in my 20s where I was like, okay, but like, how do we make it better? Like, where's the Band-Aid? How do we just move on? And now in my 30s and beyond, I'm just kind of like, yeah, I'm just going to sit here and listen to what you have to say. Like, and that's what I want from somebody too, is just to sit and really listen and go, yeah, that sucks. Like my husband has a way of trying to completely be like, yeah, but, you know, well, with me, it happens this way. Or like with me, I know this helps. And I'm always just like, I just want you to sit there and listen to me and say that fucking sucks. And that's right. Like basically it. I mean, mm-hmm. if they're asking you, how do I stop feeling this way? How do I move forward? Okay, now we can start to work on like future, you know, plans, strategies. But like before that, I think, yeah, you just sit there and like you are a receptacle for their feelings and emotions and thoughts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I want to talk really briefly before we have to move on to the next portion of the show. I want to talk briefly about the hesitance that I think most people have for like toward asking for help. Like I'm always, like I was saying, I always feel like I'm going to annoy people. I don't want to be annoying. But I mean, then I kind of think whenever somebody asks me for help, I'm never annoyed. You know, like there's there's a disconnect between what I think people are going to think of me and how I think when other people act like that toward me. So that's like something that I still have a hard time asking people like, hey, I need help. But, you know, like Alyssa, when I told you that like after having a baby, I was really miserable because it's miserable right after you have a baby. I thought that was like one of the first times that I was like, you know what? I do need something. Here's what I need.
Yeah.
So yeah, I wonder what your thoughts are, all of you, on getting over the hesitancy in asking someone for just a little shoulder to lean on.
You know what I realize is a little like a sneaky little tactic that my brain uses is if I have to say, obviously have many issues asking people for help, but if I do, I still feel like I need to provide possibilities so that like it's basically a very binary like, hello, should I do A or B? So I'm doing all the work. I'm still just saying, right? Like, I feel like a systems analyst where I'm just like, okay, yes, I need help. But the question is, do I do this or do I do this? And it's like sometimes we have to remind ourselves that it's okay if we don't know the answer and we don't have to do the work for somebody else and provide them with possibilities for whatever we need a solution to. I have been thinking about this lately. This is so dumb. So I have a pilot that's in contention right now, and it's that like very, you know, that period where you're just like, oh, is this going to happen? What's going to happen? And I truly don't know what mindset to have. Should I have the mindset of like, I'm fucking a powerful manifester and this is going to happen and it's already happening? Or should I set it aside and like not think about it? And so when I have asked a few friends in the last couple of weeks, like, you know, they asked me, how am I doing? And I'm like, this is where I'm at. I have to provide those two possibilities as though there is a binary rather than just being like, I don't know. I fucking feel weird about this. Help me. And mm-hmm. I think that maybe it is a sign of increasing strength if we can express vulnerability and not feel like we have to do all of the work and go through all of the steps in our brain to make it more bite-sized and ingestible for somebody else. How you do that is very difficult. It comes with, I guess, more self-awareness, which, you know, I at least I'm at the point in my life where I'm aware of the tactics that I'm using. But how I get past that is very difficult. So
no, well, you know what I think though, also about sort of, you know, as we get older, I don't know about you guys, but it's like we have a lot of friends, right? But we have less and less time. So it's like, who are the people you are going to invest your time in? And this is like, oh God, the thought of saying it, I already think I might cry. But it's like when a month ago, my cat Petey was really sick and I knew that he was going to pass away. And we were recording this show. And I sent an email to everyone. I'm like, you guys, I'm so sad, but this is what's happening. And I really need your help. And every single person who produces this show and all the co-hosts that day were like, we fucking got you. And what that showed me is that like, I can count on these people and they can handle me being sad and they can handle me needing help. And then there are people who I've known way longer than all of you guys who were like, it's going to be fine. I was like, I am literally not fucking fine. I have so many things I have to deal with this week. And all I want to do is like lay on the bathroom floor with him. And I just think that those people who don't respond, I just don't invest in anymore, right? If you can call people and be like, I need your help. I'm so sad. and they can't handle it, then like, why are you spending your time on them? That's kind of my thing. Cause then it gives me more time to invest back in the people who are there for me and for whom my tears and emotions, which as you guys can see, I started crying. I'm fine now. Cause I got my words out.
You like a faucet, girl.
Look, now I'm fucking back, but that's what makes me feel better. When I hold my emotions in and don't say what's bothering me, it is a fucking slippery slope of like depression spiral. And when I say it, I feel better. And so anyway, that is like, there were people who, you know, when I did try to be like, hey, you know what? Because I didn't want to burden the co-hosts because I was like, we all got to get through this show. But I was like, I can't not, I have to. And so I'm sorry, guys. And everyone was like, we got you. And that is the greatest, and that is the greatest feeling when that expression of love is reciprocated, is my point. And so I just think we should cut out the people who can't handle the real feel, because
I love that kind of like the brutality. It seems brutal, but it's really it's being protective of our own selves and our own time. And I like it. I like it. We're not teenagers anymore. We don't have to, it's a high school. We have to see these people day in and day out, you know, because our schedule's like.
Right. Because homeroom will be awkward.
Kara, do you have any final thoughts for show?
I just say all the time, your 30s and your 40s are for cutting people out.
Yeah.
I have been cutting people out left and right. So I agree. If you're not, I totally agree. I mean, that's the test. I hate to say it. It's a test. Like, and if someone's not going to be there for you when you're at your lowest or at your most vulnerable and in need, then what are you doing? Why are you wasting your time? Go have cocktails with somebody you like, and that will help you.
Mm-hmm. Totally. Be ruthless about taking care of yourself. I think that that's a really important thing.
Yeah.
Be ruthless about it because, nobody's got time. Life is short. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we've got Sanity Corner.
Five years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Game night's fun until someone spends 5 minutes lining up one shot. Chalk, breathe, re-chalk. Still aiming.
While they figure it out, I fire up Chumba Casino.
I can spin anywhere, anytime, and there's always a new social casino game every week. Spins happen way faster than that shot. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
And welcome back. We have almost reached the end of the show, but not quite. We're going to take a little bit of time to share with you things that make us feel sane in a world that has gone apeshit crazy. This is Sanity Corner. Alyssa, do you want to start us off this week? What's keeping you sane?
Oh, have I got a good one. Guys, I think, and Caroline, our producer, understands this about me. I don't really love reality TV, but I do love some TLC reality shit. And I am obsessed and have been obsessed with Sister Wives for like 10 years. And let me tell you something. Just when I needed a little pep in my step, I found out that third wife, Christine, left Cody Brown, who I think is one of the most insufferable human beings on the fucking planet. And I was like, it brought me such joy. And I just, I'm so curious about polygamy, which is why I've always watched the show. And I think all the different wives are so interesting. But anyway, fucking Christine dumped his ass. And I can't wait to watch the second part of the tell-all this weekend.
Wait, can I say one quick thing, Alyssa? The girl who colors my hair just came to my house to do it last week and was telling me how much she loves Sister Wives. And she's like, I wish there was a podcast like yours about Sister Wives. And I think there's a hole in the market. And I feel like I'm just saying.
Oh my God. It is,
I know you're a busy woman, but
the dynamics are unbelievable. And anyway, so I was like, you go, Christine.
I'll go second. My sanity corner is also a TV sanity corner. Have you guys seen We Are Lady Parts?
No.
No. Is it Liz Winstead? Like part of?
No. It's a British TV show that is about. Okay. So We Are Lady Parts. You can stream it on Peacock. I just saw like a bunch of previews for it and ads for it on the internet because I was like, I am part of the target audience for this show. It is a British sitcom created by a woman named Nita Manzoor, and it is about a punk band consisting of entirely young Muslim women.
Oh,
and
yes.
It is, the music is super catchy. The acting is great. It is hilarious. It is touching. It's a world that I've never really been inside. It feels like an invitation into a world. And that's like one thing I love about TV is really great TV feels like an invitation into a world instead of a creation of like a, you know, a fake multicam setup, whatever. So I just love it. I can't say anything bad about it. I think that everyone should watch it. I think there's 6 episodes and they're all streaming on Peacock. I like devoured all of them in one night. It's so, so good. They do a cover of 9 to 5, the Muslim punk band does. And it is just really, really good. I want to like rewatch it today. That's, even talking about it makes me want to rewatch it. It's so good.
Because of you, I am now downloading Peacock. The one app I was like, I'm going to pass on Peacock. But
it is worth it. It is worth it.
I have Megan Gailey's password. That's how I have Peacock.
Kara, what is keeping you sane this week?
Well, this week, I will say, normally it would be television. I would be talking about something television related also. But last night, I took a tap class. I took
what?
An adult.
That's amazing.
I took an adult tap class. I have 0 tap experience. I have dance experience, like jazz and stuff like that. But my friend and I, it's actually at the same ballet studio in my neighborhood where my daughter goes. And like, I started following their Insta or something, and they had an adult tap class, and my friend and I both had wanted to take it. So we went last night. It was us, one other woman, and a teenage girl whose mom was there watching her and us. And it was really fun. And it was cool. Like, I just was like happy that I did. It's been a long pandemic. I haven't done anything out of the box or anything like different like that in a really long time. And I was just like, okay, this is something different. I haven't really like tapped into this part of myself in a long time. No pun intended or pun intended. And yeah, it was like my friend, like afterwards, my friend was like, yeah, I feel like it like helps my brain, like just to learn a tiny like combination. You know what I mean? Like mm-hmm. it's like I'm not looking at my phone for an hour, which I like. And mm-hmm. so I would recommend if anyone is thinking about starting something. I mean, we wear masks. It's there's only 4 of us, so it's very distanced. but, you know, that was a fun sanity thing for me this week.
That sounds so fun.
Kara, I just have to say, we have been, my neighbors and I have been looking for a tap class for a year, but the dance studio in town has not been operating. But let me tell you, there is nothing. You put on those show tunes, you hear a little Judy Garland, you start shuffling off to Buffalo. It is the greatest feeling.
It was fun.
Okay. So Kara and I now live like kind of in the same neighborhood, and yes. I am color me intrigued. We will talk more
Erin,
offline yeah. about
you
this.
Will crush the time step.
Okay. All right. We'll see. Grace, what is your sanity corner this week?
I can't believe what a basic B I'm going to sound like when I tell you what my sanity corner is, but I dug deep last night. I was thinking, Grace, what is it? What is it this week? Tell the people, they need to know. I got a Vitamix over the holidays.
Oh,
revolutionary. And I cannot believe believe how revolutionary it is. It is striking to me. I really thought that I knew blenders.
Oh, yeah,
and
maybe.
I thought that I knew the heights of what a blender could do for me. I mean, I was like, okay, this is what I can expect from an at-home smoothie. Okay, this is what pesto is just going to be like for me. No, my friends. Vitamix changed everything. I'm drinking a Green Goddess smoothie off camera right now. Ooh, baby. I can't even taste the spinach in it. I can't even taste the kale. I can't even taste the celery. I mean, it is, and I'm mad because it's so expensive. And it was a gift, and I'm grateful for it. Really, it has changed everything. It has changed the way that I approach everything in the kitchen. I use it twice a day. I've used it twice a day since I got it. I cannot recommend it enough. Get yourself a Vitamix. It's worth the investment.
Mm-hmm. Oh, totally. It's one of those things that you see how much it costs and you're like, are you kidding? And then you try it and you're like, okay, it's awesome. It's like the Dyson, it's like the Dyson Airwrap. You're like, ugh. Are you fucking fine? Fine.
My friend told me, put the Vitamix on your registry for your wedding. I go, it's $500. No one's going to buy that for me. It's so expensive. And then, you know, I had an uncle who had to bail at the last minute. He felt guilty enough to buy me that Vitamix.
Wow.
So if you're registering, just put it on there. You never know.
Shoot
maybe
for
the group
stars,
will go in
you
on
know?
It.
Absolutely.
Okay. Well, that's all the time we have for this week's episode. Thank you, Kara. Thank you, Grace, for coming by. It was great seeing both of you. This was a really, I wish we could just keep having this conversation. It was great. Alyssa, thank you as always for being my ride or die. And thanks to the Washington Post's Robin Given for the great interview. And thanks to all of you, the listeners. There will be more Hysteria for you next week. Hysteria is a Crooked Media production. Caroline Reston is our producer. Our executive producer is me, Erin Ryan. Alyssa Mastromonaco is our co-producer, and Brian Semmel is our associate producer. Kyle Seglin and Charlotte Landis are the sound engineers, and our editor is Sarah Gibolaska and the folks at Chapter 4. Thank you to our digital team, Nar Melkonian, Mia Kelman, Milo Kim, and Matt DeGroot.
Looking for excitement? Chumba Casino is here. Play anytime, play anywhere. Play on the train, play at the store, play at home, play when you're bored. Play today for your chance to win and get daily bonuses when you log in. So what are you waiting for? Don't delay. Chumba Casino is free to play.
Experience social gameplay like never before. Go to Chumba Casino right now to play hundreds of games, including online slots, bingo, Slingo, and more. Live the Chumba life at ChumbaCasino.com.